This Friday, the 1st of February, the band The Moorings will present a night of music at the Abbey Theatre called Thomas Moore Reimagined, which celebrates the great Irish bard. I'm joined by Simon Morgan of The Moorings. Simon, you're very welcome indeed. We're going to hear one of the songs that you're performing often, The Stilly Night, in a moment, but we'll start by talking a little bit about the man himself, who led a very interesting life indeed. The son of a greengrocer, born in 1779 in Anger Street in Dublin, and went on to study at Trinity College. That in itself was unusual for somebody like him at that time. Why was that?
Well, it had only been opened up the year before. So 1793, up till then, no Catholics had been allowed in. And he joined in 1794. So he was among a band of a very few amount of Catholics, all of whom, of course, were rebellious by their very religion.
He would have been in Trinity College at around the same time as Robert Emmet. Were they acquainted?
Yeah, so Robert Emmet was there the year before him, and he was a big character in the college. So when he came in, he would have met him in history societies, in debating societies, and they became very good friends. And they would have played music together. Indeed, they both enjoyed listening to, or he would play the piano, Thomas Moore, and play Bunting's collection of Irish music, which had just come out, and would inspire Emmet. He would say, God, I'd love to be listening to that tune while leading a, you know, marching with 20,000 men. So it was quite a, they were both big influences on each other.
And this, of course, was the era of the great Belfast Harp Festival, which was in, what, 1796, I think it was, or was it 17, around about that time, anyway.
Yeah, so like Bunting had earlier on in the century had collected quite a number of he'd gone up to the Belfast Harp Festival and collected all the old tunes, which was extremely important, we know now, because a lot of the old harpists were dying, and indeed a lot of O'Carolan's pupils had were just dying. They were in their 90s at the time of the festival, so he did really good work, Bunting did.
Now, how political was Thomas Moore? Because obviously his friend Robert Emmet was exceptionally political, but would have been a member of the United Irishmen, even in Trinity, during his days in Trinity. Was Moore that overtly political?
He was, but he probably wasn't as radical. He would have been like his parents. He would have been more the gentleman, the Grattan and the Flood, and doing it in Parliament as opposed to doing it by the methods that Emmet went with. Although, while in Trinity, he did write a piece in the United Irishmen, the paper, the press, calling his fellow Trinity students. It was an anonymous article, but he later admitted to Emmet that he had been the person behind it. So he was certainly in those years, and as a young man, would have been very political, but not in the same radical way as
Emmet. Not a revolutionary, not somebody who was going to carry a pike or carry a musket.
Yeah, well, I think it can be difficult. You know, he lived a full life, so you know he has all of life's compromises, but actually he probably did just as much for Ireland in terms of being able to whisper in the ear while singing his mesmerizing songs and his beautiful romantic ballads. He would also have he had a sharp tongue in some of his lyrics, but they passed, you know, they passed by because he was such an amazing presence himself. So I think he did a lot.
Talk to me then about his connection with Lord Byron.
Well, Lord Byron, how they met was he'd got this unfavourable review from a piece he'd done about America after coming back from America, and he challenged the editor of this review to a duel. But when they both turned up, it turned out that the editor didn't have any balls in the pistol. So he got a lot of abuse at the time first because it was seen that, you know, he'd given a man an empty pistol, which wasn't a good thing. So the as Byron wrote that the courage of the men, just like the pistol balls, had evaporated. So he challenged him to a duel, or certainly implied that he would like to duel him. And
so he challenges Byron to a duel.
Well, he implied it. He said he wasn't happy. He wrote a piece. Byron was out of England at the time, and when he came back, they met and they became great friends. And Byron was a massive admirer of his work. When we think of him in a historical context, we think of the Moore's Melodies, but at the time he would have been extremely highly regarded. Both Byron and Shelley thought he was one of the finest, as did all the critics at the time. And indeed, he had a piece Lollarook, which in 1817 was the highest price ever paid by a publisher for a work at £3,000. So he was a huge influence at the time.
But, I mean, he was so close to Byron that he was given the responsibility for burning some of Byron's effects, some of his documentary effects, at least.
Yeah, well, it was quite a... Byron gave them to him for safekeeping. We don't know exactly whether he was supposed to burn them, but certainly a lot of pressure came on from the family because there was quite a lot of personal information.
Compromising material
in there. And while it is true that this happened, he did actually come out with this amazing letters and a biography on Lord Byron, which is still the definitive text on it. So he certainly made up if he did do that burning.
But he did burn some of Byron's memoirs.
Yeah, it seems so.
Now, the Irish Melodies, what's the background to the Irish Melodies? Because these come out over a period of basically around about a quarter of a century, don't they?
Yeah, so they came in 10 volumes originally, and he was commissioned to do them. And what he did in terms of the melodies was he put lyrics to them. And he was an amazing lyricist when it came to song and putting lyrics to song.
And these would have been melodies that would have been collected by people like Edward Bunting that you've mentioned.
Yeah, so indeed Bunting's widow wouldn't have been too happy. Thomas More got a lot of the credit for a lot of what Bunting did because he made them absolutely massively popular.
By putting lyrics to them.
But they were so omnipresent. I mean, it did get him into the upper echelons of English society, which is interesting for a...
Just mention some of the names, some of the songs, some of the melodies that for which he is famous.
Well, the Minstrel Boy was so big in America that The Last Rose of Summer, Nina Simone has done versions of that. Believe Me If All Those Endearing Young Charms, Bugs Bunny did a fine version of that. It has gone through the whole... As a matter of fact, one of the pieces, Tis Sweet to Think, I was doing some research because we're doing it in the concert and I found that Bing Crosby had done a version of it. So, I mean, they really are everywhere at that time.
How are you reimagining his work on Friday?
Well, originally when the work was done... its piano accompaniments were put by Sir John Stevenson and they were done in the style of the day. They were a parlour song, I suppose. That doesn't work today. The style of today, we're a multicultural society. So while we are staying true to the melodies, we're trying to bring the lyrics alive because his lyrics are really an important part of it. So we've kind of made them into... There are some piano accompaniments and some of the traditional Moore's way of doing it, but we are also making them into jazz songs, world music songs. We have some great traditional players and jazz players along for the evening.
But as you say, the man is very much... He's still relevant. He's not just somebody who preserved melodies. He is still very relevant today.
Unbelievably, the lyrics sail on. And it could be talking about today. 'Tis sweet to think, preempted Crosby, Stills and Nash by half a century. You know, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with.
Love the one you're with. Okay, well, we're going to hear... thank you very much for coming in and for talking to us tonight. And we're going to hear Oft in the Stilly Night performed by the Moorings.
Oft in the stilly night, ere slumber's chain has found me, of other days around me, the smiles, the tears of boyhood's years, the words of love then spoken, the eyes that shone now dimmed and gone, the tears heart now broken. Thus in the stilly night, her slumber's chain hath bound me. of other days around me.
Was Oft in the Stilly Night, performed there by the Moorings, Simon Morgan on vocals, Drowsin Derek on the guitar, and Carl Nesbitt on the bouzouki. And that concert by the Moorings, Thomas Moore Reimagined, is taking place at the Abbey Theatre at 7:30 this Friday, the 1st of February. Tickets available now. We'll put a link on our own website, rte.ie/history. And as I say, that's Simon Morgan earlier talking to us on the History Show about the life of Thomas Moore.